ITS Coffee Break for Thursday, April 24th, 2008.
On this week's edition of the ITS Coffee Break, we'll talk about how our department is helping to celebrate Earth Week. We'll give you an update on the status of Moodle course creation for fall and summer. We'll talk about other exciting things going on in ITS here at the end of the semester, and we'll point you in the direction of some new developing tech news.
Welcome to the ITS Coffee Break. My name is Ken Nyquist.
And I'm Courtney Bentley.
And I guess the first thing we want to talk about is recycling.
That's right. We have an exciting development to let you know about. Chris Koch has actually organized an electronics recycling event for tomorrow.
Which is pretty cool. And I will actually get this up today so that we'll be able to, people will be able to hear about it in time for tomorrow.
Yeah, so Friday, April 25th, we invite all faculty, staff, students to bring in their old electronics that they have laying around and recycle them for free.
I guess we need to define what an electronic is. So
that's
people
right.
Don't bring in their
microwave
and microwaves.
Yeah. No, it's not that kind of thing. It's computers, laptops, monitors, keyboards, cell phones, old PDAs,
batteries,
TVs.
Cables.
Yeah, so it's true electronics, so things that entertain you or help keep you organized, that kind of stuff.
And they got a legitimate recycler to do this, right?
Yeah.
So strip out all the
precious
metals. And...
Yeah, so actually the company that's joining us with this is called Johntech, and they are the company that we usually send all of our campus things to, and they go through and they actually use Department of Defense standards, and they completely clear off hard drives and things like that before they get recycled.
So, yeah, pretty cool. I don't have some stuff in my basement, so I think tonight I'll be doing that when I get home, going through and figuring out what I can
toss. Yeah.
So
they'll be located on the lower level of Markle Deck all day on Friday from 10 to 2. So bring your electronics.
Very cool. Now, we also have a bit of, I guess just housework we need to talk about. It's spring cleaning here at ITS.
Right.
The first thing is that people have been asking, so we'll tell you, that fall... and summer Moodle course creation will be done on May 5th. That's our target date. I have some sanity checking I need to do on the data, but once that's done, we'll be ready to load all the courses into Moodle for the next semester. So you can look forward to that happening fairly shortly.
And just another note on Moodle, we'll talk about something that we have upcoming, but we are looking for faculty to do 5-minute presentations in mid-May on the way that they're using Moodle. So students, if you're listening, feel free to go into Moodle and nominate your professors. And faculty, if you're listening, feel free to go in and offer to present yourself.
Now that's through a survey on the homepage of Moodle.
It is indeed.
Right? So
yep.
moodle.lafayette.edu, right on the homepage there should be links for faculty and students to submit proposals, right?
That's right.
Cool. Now the other big news on the ITS front is that our webpage has moved.
That's right.
We are now at its.lafayette.edu. We have a new and improved version of the ITS website. It may look the same, but it's running the latest and greatest version of Drupal. And this is kind of laying the framework for us to roll out a new library website and to start implementing some cool new things on the ITS site. But the big thing for everybody else is that the new address is its.lafayette.edu. Now, if you bookmark the old site, that's okay. It's just going to redirect you to the new one. But eventually, you're going to want to update your bookmarks. And let's see, the last thing I guess we wanted to talk about was actually to ask folks a question about how they're using multimedia on the web, right? I guess
yeah.
Is that the best way to describe it?
Yeah. So basically we're doing some investigating, some experimenting on streaming and streaming servers and things like that. So we would like your input on how you would foresee using multimedia content for classes and things like that.
So I think some of the use scenarios that we're talking about are, for example, you have music that you want your students to listen to. You would like to set that up as a stream. So instead of circulating a CD in the library, you just have them go to a stream and then they would listen to it that way. Or maybe you want them to listen to individual songs and then have feedback on it. Or you have a video that you want somebody to watch. So you put it up on the streaming server and they watch it that way. These are the kind of different scenarios that we've heard already that people are interested in. And I guess guess what we're just trying to figure out is what the demand is. You know, how much time should we invest in this sort of stuff? We've done some experiments to date. I've been playing around with the help of John Fulton, setting up a test server of the Darwin streaming server, which is an open source version of the QuickTime streaming server. And it's really just a question of how much time we want to invest in all this. So send us your feedback. You can email us at itsblog@lafayette.edu. In tech news this week, I wanted to lead off with this story, which just kind of blows my mind, which is PayPal is blocking users with old browsers from using their site to cut back on phishing attempts. That is not what blows my mind. What blows my mind is that a significant portion of their users are using Internet Explorer 3 and Internet Explorer 4 to visit their sites.
Do you think people just don't bother to... update,
I don't know. I mean, they got to be running like Windows 95 or maybe 98, right?
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you have to be like running just the world's oldest, most spy bot infected, virus infected machine to still have IE3 on your box?
Well, I mean, you know, I guess I can kind of see it because one of the big users of PayPal is eBay, right? And so, I mean, for some people, all they do is eBay and email.
Yeah, I guess. I can't imagine what the internet must look like to someone who uses Internet Explorer 3. I mean, that was the, just kind of going back, I mean, we're talking like late 90s, right? Like, we're talking like 97 for Internet Explorer 3, probably. And it barely had CSS support. And what CSS support it had was really flaky. But wow, I just... So if you've got Internet Explorer 3 or Internet Explorer 4, please upgrade.
And give us a call and tell us who you are.
And the reason, to tie into this, the reason why they don't do it is, the reason why they don't want these browsers is because the browsers themselves don't have any anti-phishing tools built into them. Which, interestingly, apparently neither does Safari on the Mac.
Huh.
So there's been some speculation about, well, what does this mean for Safari? You know, will they say, well, you can't use Safari on PayPal?
Yeah.
So I don't know. But and I don't even know of any add-ons for Safari for anti-phishing. So I don't know. I don't really use my computer in such a way that I get really concerned about phishing because I don't really follow links that I receive in my email to go to a site. But, you know, it was an interesting story. And man. IE3, it still just blows my mind. All right, so the other thing, I just read this really quick, and I haven't tried it yet, but apparently the New York Times is entering Google's Earth.
Yeah, so basically, I guess the New York Times is offering geocoded news so that you can actually, it basically shows up in real time, in real location.
Right, so you'll be in Google Earth, and you'll be in a location, and you'll be able to see a story associated with that location because they've got the coordinates in the story when they posted it to the New York Times website.
I think it'll be pretty cool. I think I may have to launch Google Earth one day and just play with it.
I think so. You know, and there's been a lot of talk about Web 2.0 and what's going to come next. And one of the things they've talked about is the semantic web, the idea that you can give more meaning to information and then use it in new and different ways. And this is a perfect example of it. It also kind of feeds into, well, is Google Earth ultimately going to compete with Second Life?
I tend to think it may.
Because they've got all the components, and everybody keeps talking about this. They keep saying, well, you know, you've got, like, SketchUp, which allows you to build objects that you can then put into, I think it's into Google Earth,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, SketchUp
is
Google Earth.
You know, you've got all these tools there, so what's keeping Google from throwing the switch and actually making it a virtual world where you have avatars and you can wander around a virtual Google Earth? You know, when they keep pulling in information like this, that's pretty cool. To be able to map the real world to Google Earth and then, you know, walk down a virtual street and see stories and information that relates directly to that street.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
I mean, though, I think some people would still prefer Second Life because they prefer the fantasy and the ability to create non-existent worlds and places.
Well, and I wonder if you could almost have, like, different planes
different
of reality.
Different layers.
Yeah, different layers within Google Earth. So you've got the... real Google Earth, and then you have the virtual Google Earths that maybe you stack on top of it. But
so maybe it's not Google Earth. Maybe it's, you know, Google Planet.
Or... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they have Google Mars.
Yeah.
It's. Be. I don't think it's not as cool as Google Earth in so much as it's only a web-based thing. I don't
right.
think they've got a 3D thing. But yeah. still, pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So
talking about mashup and integration between two separate things, there's also a new tool within Facebook called Blogit.
Right. I came across this, and I mentioned this briefly at my Web 2.0 brown bag last week, but I hadn't had a chance to play with it really yet, and I wasn't able to actually figure out where it lived within Facebook, but I finally got it figured out. So there's a link to this in the show notes if you want to try it yourself, but basically this is a new app within Facebook that allows you to post to pretty much any service you want to.
Yeah, so Blogger, Twitter, I think I saw... not TypePad.
No, TypePad, WordPress.
TypePad, WordPress.
Well, it's by Six Apart, so...
Right, so it's TypePad sort of driven.
Right, but it will tie into pretty much, you know, Pounce and all these other different things. So the idea here is that you can go into Blogit and you want to post an update, right? So you want to update your status within Facebook, but you want that status update to also show up within Twitter. So you say, okay... And you can uncheck and check where you want things to show up. So maybe you're posting something that you only want to have show up in Facebook for your friends rather than having it show up in the Twitter public timeline. Well, you can do that. You have that kind of control. You can also post blog posts. So you can post to your Blogger account from within this, which is kind of cool. So the only downside I could see to it is that there's no way to tag things. So
yeah,
you're posting to your blog.
Kind of limited.
If you're posting to Blogger, you can't... then specify which tags it should have once it gets within Blogger. But you can do the initial post, so...
Mm. And it may be coming.
Yeah, who knows? So that was interesting. Now, the other big news within Facebook, and this has just happened within the last day or two, right, is chat. There's now chat within Facebook. So you can be logged into... I think it's only within Facebook, though. I don't know that there's a freestanding app for it. But basically, you can chat with your friends within Facebook. Now, there can be a downside to this. I was reading on Twitter, this guy had something like almost 5,000 friends within Facebook, and when the chat app came along, they all decided to, or a significant percentage of them decided to chat with him. And he left his computer up overnight with Facebook open, and he came back in the next day, and his desktop had been completely taken over by chat messages. So, beware, you friendly people on Facebook.
But, watch who your friends are.
Yeah, it seems interesting. I mean, I'm not in Facebook enough to make it worthwhile, but I could see students who are in Facebook far more often than we are could probably get a lot more use out of it. So, pretty nifty stuff. In help news, I came across this again through Twitter, thus proving... Once again, that Twitter is actually useful, right?
You know, I must say that the first, I guess, couple weeks I was on Twitter, not a whole lot of activity. I mean, I thought it was interesting and it was nice to kind of ease into it. But I must say, in the last 2 to 3 weeks, it has been so helpful, like way more helpful than anything else I do probably in a day.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, just because of the instant feedback and, you know, people having different perspectives and sharing information and, you know, and a lot of times it's not necessarily information I'm sitting around like looking for. It's just, you know, things that are sort of processing in the back of my head and then
right.
someone will post something.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I agree. I think it definitely kind of comes back to that question that we've been asked and that Brian Alexander from Nightly was asked, you know, how do you keep up with it all? Well, this is one of the ways that you kind of keep up with it all is that you don't. You just let your
right.
friends keep up with it. And then, you know, if they're twitting about it, you can kind of see what's churning out there in the larger world. And the other thing that I'm finding interesting is the cross-pollination between my different friends.
Yes.
So because these are people who don't know each other except through your friending on Twitter.
Twitter,
and they start talking to one another, and they're like, well, you two don't know each other. You know, it's just interesting to see how the networks start interacting.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, one of the things I found through kind of the education side of Twitter is this link to 7 incredibly useful tools for evaluating a web design. And I brought this up here because this is something that we get asked about occasionally. You know, people want to redo their website and they want to have a better idea as far as statistics and, you know, what's working on their site and what's not. And I think a lot of people, when they go to design their site, they may be using Google Analytics, but for the most part, they really don't know where people are going on their site. So this is basically a list of different tools that you can use to get these kind of useful analytics for what people are using. It includes ClickHeat, which is kind of a graphical overlay for your website, and it my understanding is, I haven't used it yet, but it tracks when people come to your site, and then you can have this overlay on your site that shows the hot and cold parts of your site, the spot, the places that people go to the most and the places that people ignore. There's YSlow, which is an add-on for Firebug, which is a little web developer thing for Firefox, that analyzes your page's load time and gives you suggestions for ways that you can make the page load faster, because you know, even in the world of, you know, fast internet connections, nobody wants a page that takes a long time to load, especially if you're, say, on your iPhone.
That's right. I was just thinking that. I wasn't going to say it.
But yeah, I mean, there are places where, you know, all of a sudden you're on a slow connection and you're like, oh my God, this page is taking forever to load. And it's because, well, it really is taking forever to load because it's got a lot of graphics and such on it. And then there's a reference to Google Analytics for tracking data on your site and a bunch of other stuff. So some of it is free tools. Some of it is stuff that is kind of like demo mode and that you have to pay for. But either way, I think it's a good way of finding out what's available out there for learning more about how your site works.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess in the remaining part of help news, I guess sort of leading off to that, if you're looking to redesign your website or if you're just looking to pick up some new skills over the summer, if you have suggestions for workshops or things that you would like for IT to offer, if you don't mind, pop in a quick email to ITS blog. We are actually developing the schedule next week, and that should be posted by the first part of May. So get your request in soon. Things that are already scheduled and ready to be offered. The next brown bag, which we've had great attendance for, I might add.
I'm really impressed. We've been filling the
Which is wonderful. But the next one is one that Jason Alley will be doing called Podcasting, Still Cutting Edge. Yes, but it's more mainstream than you might think. And that one will be Wednesday, April 30th at noon in the Jenda Bean Room. And then the last one of the semester will be our Moodle Showcase on Wednesday, May 14th at noon. And that will also be in the Jenda Bean Room. And we are currently calling for faculty to participate in this. So like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, if you are a faculty member who's doing something interesting, doesn't have to be super interesting. We really just want to give people ideas of things that they might be able to do next semester with their courses.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this briefly before, but it doesn't need to be something spectacular. It could just be having a really robust discussion forum where you had a conversation that really kind of lasted all semester and people got excited about. That is a perfectly acceptable demonstration of how Moodle worked for you. So, because a lot of people wonder about that. What does it take to get an online forum going? Because you know, the conversations don't always take off and it can be frustrating. So,
You know, we invite you to participate. We also invite you to just come and grab a free lunch and hear how your colleagues have been using Moodle for the semester. And our last workshop for the semester is Recording Audio and Creating Podcasts, and that's going to be on Thursday, May 1st. So if you come for the brown bag on Wednesday, you may want to come back on Thursday and actually see how to do these things. It'll be hands-on, and you'll get to play with fun toys, and it's a good time.
Right, so you can register for that by going to its.lafayette.edu, and that's about it for this podcast. You can send us feedback at itsblog@lafayette.edu.